All right, we're going to shift gears here and talk about President Bush and China. It's fair to say that President Bush did not discover China just the other day.
This accident has the potential of undermining our hopes for a fruitful and productive relationship between our two countries. To keep that from happening, our servicemen and women need to come home.
Maybe difficult to recall, but that's President Bush speaking back in April of 2001. Bush was dealing with a crisis between the U.S. and China when a U.S. spy plane collided with a Chinese fighter jet in international airspace over the South China Sea. China was holding service members, and that was the president demanding their return. But how does President Bush sound yesterday, speaking in a speech in Bangkok, Thailand?
We speak out for a free press, freedom of assembly, and labor rights, not to antagonize China's leaders, but because trusting its people with greater freedom is the only way for China to develop its full potential.
President Bush speaking last night in Bangkok. He's now on his way into Beijing to attend the Olympics. And Jonathan Head of the BBC World Service, I think it's fair to say that while those remarks were critical, a very lukewarm kind of tepid criticism that the Chinese leadership can't be too unhappy about. What do you think?
Well, the Chinese have reacted in the same well-rehearsed way that the president himself presented his concerns on human rights. They said you can't interfere in our internal affairs, but nobody's expecting a diplomatic row over this. The president had to say something on human rights when you remember those recent violent events in Tibet, all the people who want him to do that. He couldn't really do it in Beijing itself. That would have soured what's essentially a sporting event. And he's made it clear he wants his time in China to be seen as essentially there to support the U.S. teams in the Olympics. So he's made it in Thailand before he's arrived. The Chinese knew what was coming. And yes, it was criticism, but tempered by the fact it was more of an appeal, if you like. He said, we're doing this in the hand of friendship. We want you to fulfill your potential. And he made it very clear. He said, look, change is going to happen in China, but it will happen on China's own terms with a reference to its own history. This is a very different president from the one we heard from back in April of 2001. No longer talking about China as a strategic competitor. He talked about engagement and dialogue. It was all very, very couched in soft terms, and I think he's really careful to avoid offense here.
Well, Jonathan, I take your point. A well-rehearsed appeal from a lame duck president in probably his last Asian speech is not the biggest headline in world affairs. Yet, if we take the long view, as you just did a moment ago, we can see that over the last nearly 8 years, China has had it its own way in this relationship, and that's perhaps the legacy here. Do you agree?
China's a very powerful country in this region, and the countries in this region have recognized that. There's also a recognition, and it's something that the president glossed over in his speech, but you sensed he was attending to this, that the U.S. took its eye off the Asian ball. There was such a preoccupation with terrorism in the Middle East after 9/11 that there really wasn't much involvement in Asia. There were a couple of very big Asian summits, which Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice didn't show up to, was seen as a very bad mark. The U.S. in the last 9 months has made a conscious effort to re-engage with Asia, and the president made that point in his speech. But a lot of countries here, China is now recognized as realistically as an enormous power. And that's something that any U.S. administration would have had to deal with. You can argue about how well this president has handled Asia, and many people are critical of him. He tried to answer those critics in his speech. But the reality is China is a rising power. It's not up to the levels of the U.S. yet. And you simply can't push him around. When you listen to his language on Burma, and he's been talking a lot about Burma here in Thailand, of course, he's a lot tougher. But he can be a lot tougher. The U.S. has a lot less to lose with Burma.
Well, it's an interesting legacy point here. I mean, Bush actually got into some trouble, or at least raised some controversy during his campaign back in 2000, saying that the Middle East didn't matter so much, that Asia was the big issue. And as you say, for the last 8 years, Asia has really been ignored. The ball has been dropped. The next American president will be dealing with Asia in very much the same way as the U.S. claimed it would be in 2000, correct?
I think so. There's no doubt. When you look at the economic relationships, this region is profoundly important. And there are massive challenges here. Dealing with China is immensely difficult for every country. It's a superpower, but it's very prickly. It's very secretive. Its human rights problems are in the open. They're brazen. They really upset people. You've got North Korea to deal with as well. This president has been defined by 9/11. He described himself for so many years as a war president. It's not no real surprise that he took his eye off Asia. Many say he should have got it back on Asia much sooner. The next president, realistically, will be dealing with, trying to juggle a whole bunch of strategic challenges,
well, Jonathan,
none of which is straightforward.
Thank you. Jonathan Head speaking from Bangkok, Thailand, about a president narrowly defined by 9/11 in an Asian world. Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.